Agriculture's Drive and Dine menu today on Commodity Week.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com. And with support from ADM, looking to nature for discoveries in food, feed, and fuel. ADM, resourceful by nature.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. In just a few moments, we'll talk with Purdue Extension Ag economist Chris Hurt. He penned an article on the 22nd of May entitled it Agriculture's Drive and Dine Menu. You can read the entirety of the article on the FarmDoc website in the archive section for the weekly outlook. The address is www.farmdoc.uiuc.edu.
Did you miss a closing market report or some of our other agricultural programming? We've got the answer. You can get all our AM 580 agricultural shows delivered daily directly to your computer. Just go to our website, WILOAG.org, and look for the headline, subscribe to AM 580 Ag Podcast. Follow the simple steps, and you'll never miss an ag broadcast again. From the pre-opening and opening ag reports to the closing market report to Commodity Week, all delivered to your computer when you need it. Head on over to WILOAG.org and put the AM 580 Agricultural Podcasts to work for you.
Just as a reminder, I'm out of the office and will be until July the 30th on assignment for U of I Extension in the Ukraine. On that day, which is a Monday, I'll return to my regular duties here at the radio station, WILL AM 580, and for the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. In late May, Purdue Extension Ag Economist Chris Hurt penned an article, and he titled it, for the FarmDoc website, Agriculture's Drive and Dine Menu, all about ethanol and the livestock industry in this nation. I caught up with him late in the month of May and recorded this interview. Tell me about the article you've written. It's titled Agriculture's Drive and Dine Menu. It was released through the FarmDoc website and I suppose at Purdue as well this past May 22nd.
Well, obviously, agriculture is being asked to make a contribution to the energy industry. We're not going to solve the problems for the energy industry, but we know that the biofuels and renewable fuels standards have been set already and that agriculture is being asked to make a contribution. I think the recognition is that as we have larger and larger amounts of our corn that move towards fuel, that means that there will be competition for some of the current uses. And one of those current uses, obviously, is what is related to the dining side. And that dining side is our food uses. So I think the challenges as we look at, we already are the dining side. We are the food industry as represented by agriculture. We're now going to be also in the fuel business. So these are really new challenges for us, new challenges to both meet those demands, and I think our research base in agricultural research is going to be asked to find higher yielding crops, to certainly move towards the cellulose-based fuel, ethanol from cellulose in the future. And depending on how far we go in that contribution that agriculture can make towards the fuel side or the driving side, then that will largely determine just how much change there is in agriculture. Is this going to be something we look back on and say, yes, we did see some changes, but they weren't dramatic? Or is this really going to be a dramatic shift in U.S. agriculture that we look back on and say that was a revolution that we saw. Don't think we have the answer to that right now, but the exciting part and the exhilarating part for agriculture is that we have these new opportunities and finding that balance between how much goes to the driving side, that's the new fuel side of agriculture, and how much to our traditional food side also is going to be very interesting as we plot through the opportunities that come up in the next several years.
Can you outline for me historically how much the dining side had taken advantage of corn in the U.S.? What kind of percentage went to feed livestock?
Well, animals are the original value-adding aspect of our crop agriculture throughout the Midwest and the United States. We go back into the 1960s, and surprisingly to many people, we were almost 80% of all of our corn use in the United States as an average through that period was for feed use. Of course, we stop and think that only was 20% for all other uses, including all of our food uses, all industrial uses, and remember, exports would have been in that also. Of course, the growth of the export market in the 1970s and that boom period that we went through was a major new demand factor for agriculture. I think we can see some parallels right now to the growth in the demand for at least one product, and that is corn, could be as large in this ethanol side of our industry, the fuel side, as what the export growth was in the 1970s for exports of corn and other products. But then the growth of high fructose corn syrup, the industrial side of corn usage, really growing in the 80s and particularly the 1990s, and now ethanol. So USDA current numbers for the 2006 crop, we're not going to be at 80% or 70% corn use or even 60. We'll be down to 51% of our use of corn, total use of corn, would be in the animal sector. So that traditional value-adding sector certainly has diminished in terms of its percentage. It's still the majority. And I think one of the issues for the livestock and animal sector is how much competition is there going to be for this corn if the ethanol industry really grows as the prospects right now seem to suggest in the next several years.
Should poultry, hog, and beef producers be fearful of the price of corn?
Well, they already are fearful of that direction. We talked to particularly those not only in the Midwest, but that Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, Michigan supply the primary corn supplies into the eastern corn animal demand markets, the Delmarva area for the poultry market, the North Carolina hog industry, and then all of the broiler, turkey, and egg production throughout from the Carolinas on into Georgia, even Alabama and Mississippi. When I say all, a substantial amount of that corn comes out of our states. So they are concerned. What is the direction going to be? I think we do know that monogastrics, the hogs and the poultry, tend to not get as much value out of the distiller's dried grains as what the cattle do. The inclusion rates or the amount of we can put into those rations is more like 8, 10, 12%, where in the cattle rations we can substitute maybe 20, 25% distiller's dried grains. So there is concern already how much will corn prices go up, and of course that'll be good news for our crop producers in the Midwest. But the animal industry is really asking the questions. How much will corn prices go up, and can we get value back and hopefully sufficient value out of the distiller's dried grains as a low-price feed product to offset the higher corn price? I think our initial analysis is that for the hog sector as well as the poultry sector, it's not likely that with such small inclusion rates, the higher corn price will not be offset by gains on the cheaper feed prices from the distiller's dried grains. Now, a lot of work still has to be done on that. So I think there are these issues. They are the challenges that we are beginning to come into focus, the drive and dine menu, the food-fuel balance. Where will that be, especially if we see ethanol become a much larger percentage And that's not so much this 06 crop. Our current estimates are we're going to go up to 21% of our production will be ethanol use in the 06 crop. And that's phenomenal, considering 3 years ago, the 03 crop, we were about 11% usage going to ethanol. I think the real crunch, then supply crunch, comes with the if we continue to grow the ethanol demand for corn in 07. With current growth rates, we'd be pushing up towards the high 2 billion, almost 3 billion bushels of corn usage for ethanol in the 07 crop, and I'm projecting that out around 25 to 26% of all of our corn usage. So the question obviously becomes, when do we have such a big demand growth that our supply response struggles to keep up? And, of course, that's when we see substantially higher prices, and we're already seeing that in terms of seeing DEIS 07 corn $3 plus on the future side. I think the recognition in the marketplace is already out there that we're working through our surpluses of corn in the 06 crop, and, boy, all bets are off on 07 because maybe we'll see demand outpacing our ability to supply, and that would be some very high prices.
I want to stay with the livestock sector for just a moment. How is it that the producers need to prepare themselves for the potential high cost of corn in the marketplace, especially the hog and poultry producers, if they can't replace that with a fairly cheap commodity called DDG?
The livestock sector traditionally does is a shock absorber to wide fluctuations in prices of corn and certainly soybean meal. We've seen it in the short crop years where the livestock sector has to make adjustments, lower feeding rates, lighter marketing weights, cutting back of the herd. I think we'll have the potential for the same kind of things coming up here if ethanol demand continues to grow as rapidly as it is. And then, of course, we have to remember that we will have a supply short year. We don't know what year that will be, but there will be one coming up in the future. What we're encouraging the livestock sector to think about are that that oftentimes these particularly supply shock years, you have substantially higher prices. The last one we really had on corn, we went over $5 on corn. You know, there is that possibility that we could set new high records on corn prices in a supply short year because the demand for fuel is so strong, given current situation anyway, and the demand for food is also strong even with high prices. So we're encouraging them first to think this year is probably coming. Will that be 06, 07, 08? Nobody knows what that is. But the second thing then to think about is what happens in the adjustment. Grain prices, feed prices go higher. That generally causes losses in the livestock sector for a year or a year and a half, and then we get liquidation of herds, and at that point then supplies of livestock and livestock products drop, and we get high enough prices to pay the higher prices for feed. So we want producers on the livestock side to start to think strategically. There probably is one of these years coming. We'll have substantially higher prices on the feed side, that if you can get through that 1 year or 18-month period, then you get an adjustment to higher prices. So some of the things that they can certainly be thinking about, think strategically about how can we link or do alliances with corn suppliers. We've already are hearing of some southeastern interests that are buyers of corn coming in and doing alliances on grain origination with some grain elevators here in the eastern corn belt. So this is one way to try to compensate. In some smaller operations, trying to link to the production, the crop production sector. Now, again, this doesn't make sense for very large livestock and poultry operations, but some smaller ones, ownership of some land or some alliance with some grain farmers might make some sense. We continue to have the opportunity to use futures and options markets to manage risk. So I think the focus on thinking about doing some hedging in the next several years, and maybe that's only 15% or 20% or 25% that they use futures and options as a hedge against the possibility if we see substantially higher prices. I think the point is they have to get through that year and a half, and then we'll get adjustment upward in the food prices, their product prices. But the bottom line is they have to get through that short-run period in order to enjoy the more fruitful period that will come 1 to 2 years later.
One of the most interesting portions of the article that you've written that's available on the FarmDoc website at this time, to me, is the idea that the ethanol plant producing ethanol can really afford to pay a very high price for corn, whereas the livestock producers cannot.
What we see right now, of course, is that the energy markets have very high values. We all know that at the gasoline pump. Second, that we have a federal incentive for ethanol, and that continues to add returns for ethanol producers. And then the third big factor for ethanol right now, trading over $3 a gallon for wholesale ethanol, is that the value of ethanol as an oxygenate is extremely high right now. There just simply is not enough ethanol in the market. The supply is not sufficient to meet the demand. So given this current situation, ethanol producers, some estimates we have run could bid $7 a bushel or more and still have some positive returns on their plants. That is, still get them paid off in a reasonable amount of time. So there's tremendous value to being able to convert corn into ethanol. Certainly, those are price levels that the fuel side of the drive and dine menu, the drive side can outbid the animal side enormously at this particular point. What we were dealing with is more corn prices not at $6 or $7 a bushel, but on down in the 2.25, 2.30 range that we see currently, because we've had such a large surplus from the 2004 crop. So I think what this tells us is that as we eat away that surplus, then what we will see, and that eating away of that surplus will occur during the probably the 2006 marketing year from September 1 through the end of August of 06, that we're going to see increases in those corn prices. There's going to be some users. Cattle feeders are already losing money. The hog industry, we think, will be at a loss this fall if corn's $2.50. So we may be seeing some of these adjustments that have to occur with higher corn prices coming up as early as the last half of this year. So that is a bit of a troubling thought, but it is the reality of the market that right now the drive or the fuel side of agriculture is going to be dramatically able to outbid the dining side or the food side. What will have to happen then is if we do see this constraint on corn supply is that the food cost will have to come up, the product prices for meat, milk, and eggs will have to come up, and then a year or two down the road we will see product prices for the meat, milk, and eggs be high enough they can pay the higher prices for corn. So it is an exciting time, but any time you have this much change, there certainly are going to be some sectors we want to be thinking about. Number one, recognizing this could be a reality. And then number two, have pre-thought before it occurs, what could I do? How could I make some adjustments to minimize the negative implications that could occur?
And finally, could you address the issue of policy in Washington as it concerns ethanol from corn versus ethanol from cellulosic types of products, for instance, switchgrass, and what kind of impact that may or may not have on the corn market over the long run?
Obviously, the growth of ethanol right now is based on our ability to be able to put plants, corn or starch-based plants, in production as quickly as we can get those constructed. The reason we can do that is because we go back really 30 years ago to the 1970s when we had another energy crisis in the early 70s with the formation of OPEC, and we learned the technology of extracting ethanol from corn. That technology then has been enhanced over the 30-plus year period that we have been through. What we face today is the ability, the knowledge, the capability to be able to put those corn-based ethanol plants in place. The cellulosic-based plants, we do not have all of that technology. We do not have all of the answers at commercial scale plants to do that. It's probably coming very rapidly. As we look at the policy dimension, we've had introduction by Senators Lugar and Harkin, a bill in the Senate just recently to increase the renewable fuel standard to 10 billion gallons by 2010. Now, the current standard in the energy bill is 7.5 billion by 2012. We are going to probably reach the 7.5 billion gallon renewable fuel standard by 2008. So essentially, the Harkin and Lugar proposal is to increase that even by 2010 to at least the 10 billion gallons. But following through, they go to, their proposal is to go to 30 billion gallons renewable fuels by 2020. Now, to do that, just to illustrate, with our current size of our corn crop, it would take virtually all of our corn, about 11 billion bushels, to produce 30 billion gallons of ethanol. So with the recognition is that we have to have some other source probably after 2010, and that would be the hope it's going to be cellulosic-based. So I think that technology is just not all available. There is great promise in that technology. The technology we do have is a starch-based, is the seed-based technology that we have, and perhaps that'll be a bridge to the cellulosic-based. But I think there's no question that once these plants get in place, we probably will continue to see many of them operate for years into the future. Many of those will be corn-based. And then someplace in the 2012 to 2015, we'll be hopeful that the cellulose-based agriculture, ethanol production and agriculture that will have to be supplying that will become more of the domineering technology that can boost us from maybe in that 7.5 to 10 billion gallons on up to the 30 billion that is being proposed at this point by 2020. I think the bottom line is we're just not quite there on the cellulose-based. There's great promise. The demands for our research base in our universities is great to help solve these issues. The opportunities for farms probably is going to be quite large. And perhaps that this will be in an entire revolution in very much of the way we farm, what we farm, the crops we farm, and may even have some pretty major implications on where we move our commodities, how much is exported, how much is kept in the United States, and even on the food consumption patterns of our consumers in the United States. Really big, big opportunities, and I think we can say that ethanol is a big deal to agriculture, and the driving and the dining are going to certainly be part of the menu for agriculture in the future.
That was Purdue University Extension Ag Economist Chris Hurt. He joined me for that interview late in the month of May, not very long after he penned an article for the FarmDoc website called Agriculture's Drive and Dine Menu. It is still posted there in the archive section for the weekly outlook. You can find it at www.farmdoc.uiuc.edu. Another site that you might visit to learn more about ethanol is the Ethanol and Renewable Fuels Association site. It's called ethanolrfa.org. That's www.ethanolrfa for Renewable Fuels Association. .org. On the site, you'll find a series of facts, including these on ethanol. According to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, ethanol production adds 25 to 50 cents to the value of a bushel of corn, or as much as $5.5 billion over the entire crop. Ethanol production is the third largest use of U.S. corn, utilizing a record 1.43 billion bushels of corn in 2005. Domestic feed usage is number one, exports number two. Since 1990, by the way, farmer-owned cooperatives are responsible for the majority of new ethanol production capacity. A modern dry mill ethanol refinery produces about 2.8 gallons of ethanol and 17 pounds of distillers' dried grain from each bushel of corn. In 2005, ethanol dry mills produced 9 million metric tons of distillers' dried grains. Ethanol wet mills produced about 430,000 metric tons of corn gluten meal, 2.4 million metric tons of corn gluten feed and germ meal, and 565 million pounds of corn oil. The U.S. exports, by the way, distillers' dried grains with solubles mainly to Ireland, the U.K., Europe, Mexico, and Canada. Ethanol production does not reduce the amount of food available for human consumption. This according to the ethanolrfa.org site. They say ethanol is produced from field corn, which is mostly fed to livestock, not from sweet corn, which is fed to humans. Importantly, ethanol production utilizes only the starch portion of the corn kernel. The remaining vitamins, minerals, protein, fiber are all sold as high-value livestock feed. And they say an increasing amount of ethanol is produced from non-traditional feedstocks like waste products from the beverage, food, and forestry industries. And in the very near future, as we discussed during this Commodity Week, we'll also produce ethanol from agricultural residues like rice straw, sugar cane, and corn stover, municipal solid waste, and energy crops like switchgrass. That's this week's edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com. And with support from ADM, looking to nature for discoveries in food, feed, and fuel. ADM, resourceful by nature.
Did you miss the closing market report or some of our other agricultural programming? We've got the answer. You can get all our AM 580 agricultural shows delivered daily directly to your computer. Just go to our website, WILOAG.org, and look for the headline, subscribe to AM 580 Ag Podcast. Follow the simple steps, and you'll never miss an ag broadcast again. From the pre-opening and opening ag reports to the closing market report to Commodity Week, all delivered to your computer when you need it. Head on over to WILOAG.org and put the AM 580 Agricultural Podcasts to work for you.